But I wanted to make a couple of announcements before we start. The first one, and I don't know if he announced it, but we do have prayer on Wednesday nights here in the sanctuary. And that's every Wednesday night if you want to come out and pray with us as a church body. It's every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock in the sanctuary. And the second one is we're going to be hosting a conference in about a month on March the 2nd. It's a Saturday. We're going to be hosting the Voice of the Martyrs Conference. And that's on March 2nd from 9 to 5 on that Saturday. And it's completely free. It's going to be here. And they've got a lot of really good speakers coming. And they don't release the names too early. And they don't allow us to live stream it as well. It's not going to be on the internet because there's a lot of very sensitive things that they say during these conferences. They bring in people from around the world who have been in persecuted churches, missionaries from different countries, who have some of the most amazing stories. I do know that one of the speakers is a lady who her and her husband were missionaries in the Philippines, and her husband was murdered because of the gospel. And you hear these stories, and you know we can tell them up here, but when you actually hear them from people who went through them, it really changes something. It changes how you listen. It changes how you receive the story. And so we're asking, you know, if you guys want to come out. There's going to be a lot of different churches around that are coming, a lot of different things. I asked them if they wanted us to do any kind of publication or promotion. They said, no, we cover that. If we try too much, too many people come. And so it should be a really great thing. You know, we'll open registration at 8:30, and you can show up, have some coffee, some donuts, and then at 9 o'clock it'll start. So that's on March 2nd. And we'll have more details on that as we go along. The other announcement is kind of a not announcement. We don't have a baby yet. Alyssa and I have not had our baby. When I was preparing the sermon, I turned my phone off. And I was just thinking, you know, I'd get alone and have time alone to do my sermon. But apparently that's a signal to people that we're having the baby. And so I had like 25 voicemails and texts and calls like during that time. And so I had to tell everyone that I didn't know baby yet. And I guess you can tell because I look, you know, sane and clean that there is no baby yet. I can't make any promises for next week or, you know, the next few years. But for this week, I am in my right mind. This morning, I felt God, as I was praying for this, I felt God really telling me to preach on dreams. And when he first told me that, it kind of like, you know, my first reaction was, you know, like sleep dreams or like visions or things like that. And it wasn't that, though. It was more along the lines of dreams that we have for our lives that he's given us, dreams that we live out. Not so much, you know, when you go to sleep, when you dream or when you have a vision of something, but when God has told you something that's going to happen and you live that out. So let's pray this morning before we get started. Father God, thank you for this word, God. Lord, don't let me stand in the way of it, Father. Don't let any hindrances, God. Don't let any shortcomings that I have as a person, as a speaker, as anything, God, stand in the way of what you want to say. Father, I'm here to speak your word, God. God, these people, this church has come to hear your word, Father, and we're open to you, God. We're open to the message you have this morning, Father. We're open to change our lives, God, if that's what you want. We're open to step out, Father, if that's what you call us to do. And we're willing, God. We're humble and we're willing. So the title I had for this morning was If He Says Go. And I have a lot of working titles for it. It's If He Says Go or Reviving the Dream. Making the dream come back alive. And you know, I'm not speaking so much as a church, as corporately. You know, I speak a lot of that a lot of times. Things we can do as a church, together, as a corporate body. But this morning I wanted to speak more on an individual level. I wanted to speak more on a Christian level, on an individual level between you and God and the dream that he has for your life specifically, the dream that he's given you. Because I think a lot of times, you know, with the new year, with our resolutions, with the different things that we promise to do during the year, we kind of get in this routine where the first 2 or 3 weeks of the year, we have this resolution that we keep. And then next year we start new ones, or we might start the same ones over and over and over. And we kind of sink into that routine. We sink into that over and over, year after year, and we kind of forget the big things God is calling us to. We get so mired in the small things, the day-to-day, and the living, that we forget about the bigger dreams God called us to. Because if you think back to the day you were saved, or if you think back to the day that you caught fire in the church, and you really believed in something, and you felt God was calling you to something, that kind of wanes after a while. And the more that you prepare, the more that you go in your day-to-day, the more you go to work every day, the more you start to just kind of settle into what you think Christianity is, the more you lose sight of that big dream. And I feel like this morning, God is calling us to revive that. And I have 3 points this morning. Alyssa always tells me when I'm trying to make a message, she says, you know, you have to have 3 points in a poem. And I was like, well, I have 3 points, but I don't have a poem. And you guys are thankful for that I'm not reading you any poems. But this morning, I had 3 points. And the first one was to revive the dream. And the second point is to protect the dream. And the third point is living the dream. So it's this first one, reviving the dream, or even for some people, gaining a dream, getting a dream. This first one, it's where a lot of people start. And you know, in Proverbs, there's the verse that my people will perish without vision. My people will perish without something to work towards. And you know, in your own Christianity, if you don't have something that you're working towards, if you don't have a dream for what you want to become, then your Christianity starts to die. And there's always the old metaphor that if you're climbing a mountain, if you stop, it's so much harder to keep going. And again, there are rest places, there are things, but if you stop and you start living at a certain part of the mountain, and you start living right there, trying to jumpstart that again, trying to get the fervor you had when you first started climbing the mountain, is hard to regain. It becomes something that you're just doing now. And you realize, oh, it's easier to stop. It's easier to stay here in the shelter. It's easier not to keep going. And so with a lot of these dreams, they've died in our lives. And you know, God has promised us something greater. God has promised us something in our lives. You know, when we became Christians, it was a call to become an earth shaker. It was a call to become something greater than what we were. It was a call to come awake. And when you became a Christian, when you signed your life up with Christ, He called you to that. In Philippians, it says we're called as lights in a dark universe. We're called to shine as lights, and that's what we want to become. You know, we kind of relegated this idea of becoming fishers of men. We kind of made it this, you know, catechism. We've made it this thing for children to say over and over, and repetition, and we don't really think about what it means. We don't think of it as this, you know, this violent occupation, this fisher of men. We think of it as something, you know, something like you go down to the pond and you put your thing in, you lay back and you sleep. And if you've ever been fishing like that and, you know, and you go for like 3-4 hours, it's really restful. But if you've ever gone with like the intention to catch a fish, that is the worst 3 or 4 hours you will ever spend in your life. Like you are miserable. Like you're throwing it in one area and you're like, oh, I saw ripples. And you throw it in the other area and you're throwing it all over the place and you don't catch anything. It is awful. And so what I want us to begin to think about, fishers of men, not so much this calm thing where you just sleep with your pole in the water, but this thing where you've revived your dream of becoming this earth shaker, this changer. Where you become this thing where you meet people and you meet them with the intention that they're going to leave differently than when they met you. That you're going to live your life differently, that they're going to say there's something different. There's something different about you. Because if you look just like them, they don't want what you have. If you're living a life and you're complaining and you're going along and you're always, you know, talking about this and talking about this person or your boss or something like that, and you're no different than them, or in some cases you're worse off than them, there's no way they want what you have. Nobody would want what you have. And you have to remember that you have this dream. Each Christian has it. And for some people, God goes even more specifically. For some people, God has called you to even a bigger thing. You know, we have this dream as Christians, this thing to step out. But there's an individual dream for each of our lives. For everybody, God has a place for you in His plan. God has something for you to do. For some people, He calls you to the mission field. And that's why this conference is so important for some people, because we kind of lost that idea of the mission field. We kind of think, you know, that was something that the church did in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, but it's not something God does today. That somehow today we have technology, and so we're able to reach these countries with our video stream, or we're able to reach these countries with our website, and so we don't have to actually go there. But God is still calling people to go to these people and to preach the gospel. God is still calling us to reach out to these different nations. God is still calling people to big dreams. You know, we need to revive the dream, though. One of the greatest promises God makes in the Bible is to Abraham. It's in Genesis 12. And we'll pull the verse up. But God comes to Abraham when he's still in a far way, and he starts to make these promises to him. And he says, you know, I'm going to make you a great nation. It says, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And it's this great promise that he makes to him. You know, and I'm sure Abraham's really happy about this. But 3 chapters later, God comes back to him in chapter 15. And he kind of clarifies the promise. He kind of clarifies the dream. And he tells him, he says, you know, I've told you this. Your people are going to be great. But I also, your people are going to rebel. And there will be 400 years in a land that's not their own. And there'll be slaves there. But when they come out, I'm going to give them something greater than when they went in. When they revive the dream that I gave you, the promise that I gave you, I'm going to give them something greater. They're going to leave with more possessions than they started with. But you know, the children of Israel do go down to Egypt. You know, they become enslaved in Egypt. And it's like they forget the dream. You know, they start to work and a generation goes by.
and then there are children born in Egypt who didn't know anything but slavery. And those children are, you know, they hear the dream from their parents, and they hear about how they're a great nation, but all they see is slavery. And all they see is what they were born into. And so with this kind of dream, with this kind of promise, it's taken 40 years, 80 years. And there's some conflict on how, you know, I heard a debate one time on how long the children of Israel were in Egypt and how long they were in slavery. And the debaters were trying to make it seem like, well, maybe they were only there 150 years. And maybe they were there 215 or 400 years. And if they were there 80 years, it was better than four. And it was almost like this, you know, people lived and died in slavery. And they're trying to say, well, it might have been a little bit better if they were there 100 years as opposed to 400 years or 215. But that first generation, they lived there and they died there. That's what we have to understand. They were in slavery. They were out of the will of God. They felt like they were out of the promise, and they had forgotten that. So when Moses shows up on the scene, he has to revive the dream in them. He has to tell them, you know, wake up. This is what God is saying. And it says, you know, before he ever does any works before Pharaoh, he goes to the elders of the children of Israel and he performs the work of God for them. And it says that they believed. And I can't imagine what that meeting must have been like. But he comes in and he tells them, you've been in slavery, you've been asleep, you've forgotten the promise. But God is calling you to wake up again. God is going to bring us out of here. And you know, they needed to be reminded of that. And a lot of times, you know, we forget the circumstances that we're in. And we forget the promise. We start to focus on the circumstances. We start to look around us and we start to, you know, try to focus on one thing or this thing that we can change ourselves. And we forget about the promise God has for us. You know, a lot of times we start reacting the same way, no matter what the new circumstance is. Because, you know, the Israelites could have gone to that meeting and they could have heard Moses saying, you know, wake up, we're about to leave Egypt. And they could have said, sure, we believe. And then they go right back and react the same way. The next day, they just start living their lives again. When Moses came to them and said, okay, it's time to go, they could have not packed up their things. They could have said, you know, we're comfortable here. We're slaves, but we have food. We're slaves, but, you know, it's not so bad. We can live here. And a lot of times in our own lives, we do that. We don't think about the situation. We just react the same way. And the other night, we have a college meeting on Friday nights at our house over there. Listen, I have the college group over. And so the other night, I was trying to think of, you know, something different we could have for food. So I thought maybe we could have tacos. And so I thought, you know, where's the cheapest place to get tacos, a whole bunch of tacos? And so I went to Taco Bell, and I go down the street. Whether you think they serve, you know, grade A, grade F, cow, dog, whatever you think they serve, you know, I went there, and it was cheap. And so I went in, and there was a couple of ladies ahead of me that had ordered. So I stepped up, and the girl helping me, she's doing the register, and I said, you know, I'll take this, man. I order about 50 tacos, and she didn't even bat an eye. She was just, you know, 50 tacos and put it in like that. And then she was like, she was just a robot going on. She's like, for here or to go? And I looked around me and like, look, it's just me, you know, standing there. There's two ladies. No one else is in Taco Bell. And I kind of had that face. It's like, do people do that? Do people come here and order 50 tacos and, you know, go chow down in the back row? And I like my eyes kind of like looked at her and she's like, oh, yeah, yeah. To go. And it was just, it was that moment where you get in this rut where you just say the same things over and over. You react to it the same way, regardless of the situation, regardless of what God is showing you, regardless of what God is bringing for you, what God is doing in your life, what God has called you for. Regardless of all of that, you still react the same way. You still live the same way every day. You still do your own thing. You still go day to day with the same operations, and you haven't caught hold of the dream. So we need to revive that. You know, we're creatures of habit. We get into a routine, we get into a habit, and we just start, you know, we start to kind of to live that. Kind of to think, well, maybe this is the dream. You know, a lot of times we get into that routine where one day we go to work and, you know, we might have done something good that day. And so we get home and we think, well, that was it. You know, I'm living my Christianity. That's the dream God had for me. That's what he's got for me. And we forget that he's calling us to something bigger. And so the second point is once we've regained that dream, once we've relived it or we've brought it back to life, the second point is to protect the dream. You know, a lot of times we know what God has called us to. And then when we get in among certain people or we get in among certain people with different plans, we kind of forget it and we let them kill it off. You know, one time I met a guy in Nashville. I was there doing some work with my college, and he was mopping floors, and his name was Jackie, and he told me how he had this dream once. He said, God told me to take money and to buy this building in Nashville and to do an outreach to the homeless. And his name is, we were mopping floors at the time, and Jackie was actually not a intern, but a worker for this large concert event hall. And he basically mopped the floors and he put up signs. And he said, you know, I wasn't here all the time. He said, I wasn't like this. I didn't work these kind of jobs. He said, in my life, God told me to do this. And at one point, I had this settlement from this legal thing that had happened in my life. After this call, I had this settlement, and I had enough money from the settlement to start the dream. He said, I had enough money to do what God was calling me to do. He said, it was the most amazing way God had worked it out. And he said, I put it in the bank, and I spent it on myself. He said, every day I just started spending more and more of it. I started spending more and more of it until finally it was gone. And you could almost tell, like, this guy was you know, heartbroken over this. And it had been a few years since it had happened. But he just kind of stopped. And I remember looking at him, and he was holding the mop, and he kind of stopped, and he said, you know, God called me to do something. God called me to do this, and I didn't do it.
Why isn't mine working?
I don't know. Mine's working fine.
Okay. But, you know, I've been thinking.
Well, that can't be good.
No, really. I want to do something.
Something?
Yeah, something big.
Ah, something big.
Yeah, you know, like change the world big.
Well, you know, change the world and you'll change yourself.
It's pretty deep, man. What's it mean?
No idea. It was on a card my mom gave me for Christmas.
Oh, well, thanks.
No problem. So, what are you changing?
I don't know, but I had this dream that...
Ah, dreams. Follow your dreams and you'll follow your heart.
Another Christmas card?
Fortune cookie. But listen, man, if you just get a job paying more than minimum wage, you'll have enough money to change the world. Left and right, up and down, back and forth. Oh, got him.
You know, you're right. I'm glad we had this talk.
Me too, man. You know what they say? If someone asks you to walk a mile, you turn the other cheek.
What did you say?
Well, my aunt gave me that one.
You really need some new relatives.
You know, a lot of times we do nothing to protect the dream. You know, we forget that the dream is this stage. And when we have it, it's this stage between, you know, between doing nothing and actually achieving it. And the statement I wanted to put for that was that the dreams are this middle ground between our victories and our fantasies. You know, a lot of times when you have the dream, you forget that, you know, that it could die. You kind of think, well, God gave it to me, so it's going to happen. You know, God promised it to me. And so, you know, if I just sit back, chances are it's just going to happen. And we forget that there are things that can kill it. You know, when Christ tells the story of the sower and the seeds that don't gain root, that don't grow, that don't do anything, they wither and they die. And, you know, if you let the wrong people in your life, if you let the wrong people in on your dream, on your working towards it, if you let them actually in where they influence you, they'll kill your dream. And one of the largest groups in that are complainers, whether it's you or whether it's someone around you that has started to complain. And, you know, the children of Israel, it seems like they have a doctorate in complaining. They, if you read the book, you almost forget that they're an actual people, because it's funny to actually watch them or to listen to them. And you forget that it was actually a group of, you know, a million people that are doing these things, that are complaining. You know, they complain they don't have food, so they get free food every day. And they complain that the food is bland. And so then they go on and they complain they don't have water, so they get water. They complain that they're in the desert, it was better in Egypt. And so they want a king. And so God gives them a king. And they complain and they complain and they complain. And you know, they're the only people in the history of the world that we can look back and say, God led them every step of the way. And they complain more than anyone that you find in the Bible. And it's you know, like I said, it's almost entertaining. But and you know, that killed their dream. So when they finally get to Canaan, when they finally get to the promised land that God spoke to Abraham about his descendants, when they finally get there, none of them get to go in. None of them get that thing because they've complained all this way, because they've killed the dream, because they refused to believe in it, because they refused to fulfill it, none of them get to go in. Except for two. You remember Joshua and Caleb get to go in. Because when they get there, they believe that if God was for them, then who can be against them? When they get there, they don't complain about the giants. They see it as an opportunity to achieve their dreams. They don't complain about the hard times along the way. They see that as an opportunity to grow stronger and to achieve their dreams. Because they believe that God stands with them. So you can't let the people around you, you can't let them influence you, you can't let them kill your dream. One of my favorite movies to watch is called The Truman Show. And in this movie, this television production company, they adopt this child, this boy, and without him knowing it, he grows up in a television studio. And they make a TV show of his life. And he has no idea. He grows all the way, you know, 30, 40. And they film him. They do all the actors around him. But he has to stay in this little area where they film him on his island. And so they try to think of ways that he can't leave. But the problem comes when he starts to have a dream to travel the world. He starts to have this dream to leave this little place where they film him. And they realize, you know, he can't leave. We can't take him out. You'll see the studio, the cameras, the lights. And so they try to figure out a way to keep him from traveling the world.
We were forced to manufacture ways to keep him on the island.
Last call for Chicago! All aboard!
Thank you. Windy City, here we come. Hi.
Everybody off. We've got a problem.
Locked at every turn. I would like to book a flight to Fiji.
When would you like to leave?
Today.
I'm sorry, I don't have anything for at least a month.
A month?
It's the busy season.
I'd like to be an explorer. Like the Great Magellan.
Oh, you're too late. There's really nothing left to explore.
If you let the people around you influence it, they'll kill your dream. You have to protect it from the people around you. You have to protect it from yourself, from complaining, from disbelief. And the final point I had for this morning was living the dream. That once you've regained it, once you've revived it, once you've protected it, you have to actually live it out. You know, and stepping out in faith is the beginning of that. It's the beginning of living the dream. And you know, it may be a start, maybe a small start, but it has to start. You know, you may step out a little at a time. You may start to, you know, kind of feel out and see what the dream is, but you have to start living it. Because like we said, if you don't keep moving forward, it's going to die. And you know, the greatest part of that though, the best part about this is that when you live the dream, when you're doing this, when you're stepping out, you realize that you don't stand alone. You know, when we talked about earlier, when you become a Christian, God calls you to this great dream, this great promise, this promise to become an earth shaker. But he also calls you to stand with him. And you know, if he's promised something, if he's promised it into your life and you do step out in faith, he's going to come through for you. You know, in the Garden of Eden, we broke that link with God. And that's what Christianity is. It's regaining that upward link with Christ. You know, a lot of times you kind of look at the theology of church and of Christianity, and in church we come and we create a bond between each other. There's this link that they talk about between Christians, and we've started to regain that as Christians as a body. But when you get into your quiet time, when you start to pray, when you start to live your individual dream, it's when you're rebuilding your relationship with Christ. This is between you and him and what he's called you to. It's what he's called you to become. And you know, what he's promised to do, he'll see done. But a lot of times we get anxious, we get a little bit, you know, we get anxiety, we get a little bit disbelief in that God will come through. And so we start to warp the dream. We start to twist it into something that we can accomplish on our own. You know, God promises us something and we write it down or we keep it in our mind or we believe that it's true. But as time goes on and we don't see that promise fulfilled, we start to lower it. We start to lower the standard, the bar. We start to warp the dream until it's just something that we could get done in our day-to-day life. We turn it into something, and once we do it, you know, with our own strength, once we get it done, we say, well, okay, you know, I fulfilled the dream. That was what God wanted me to do, and I did it. But God is calling us to step out in faith in Him. And, you know, an example of this is Joseph in the Old Testament. You know, some literary critics, they call him the king of dreams. They call him this. And he had these promises from God. You know, he wasn't always the best at you know, portraying them to his brothers. But he had promises from God about what he was going to accomplish. And he gets thrown in, and, you know, he gets thrown in a pit. He gets sold to the slavers. He gets taken to Egypt. He gets, you know, he starts to rise again in Potiphar's house. He starts to, you know, make his things. And I can almost imagine Joseph thinking, you know, the higher up he gets in Potiphar's house, that this is it. This is me fulfilling the dream. And, you know, he gets up there and Potiphar puts him over all his servants and everything. And then he has the fallout with Potiphar's wife. And he gets thrown right back in Pharaoh's prison, worse than he was before. And he gets thrown down in there. And so I can imagine Joseph sitting there being like, you know, I must have done something wrong. And God was fulfilling the dream. I was walking in his truth. And now it's over. You know, God has left me. God's moved on to the next person. That was it. That was my shot. And, you know, there's no chance. So you remember he has these two companions, the chef and the cupbearer, who are in there with him. And I imagine it's a fun time they're having in there. And they're having dreams and they're telling them to Joseph. And he interprets them. You know, I guess he figures, you know, I still got the gift of interpretation, so I'll interpret the dreams. And so he tells the first one, the chef, that he's going to die. And he tells me, you know, they're going to take you out in so many days and cut off your head. And that's what your dream means. And so I can imagine the chef sitting there like, huh. What? You know, I might not be dreaming anymore. That's, you know, no thanks for that one. And but the second one, the cupbearer, he tells him that you're going to get out of here. Pharaoh's going to reinstate you in just a few days. And it's interesting, the next part, he tells him, and when you get out of here, remember me. And so you can tell how God has promised this thing to Joseph, that he's going to work this out. But in this circumstance, Joseph still tries to arrange his own way out. He tries to use the gift that God gave him, this gift of interpretation, but he still tries to get his own way out. And it's really interesting if you read the story, and it makes a very big point about making this point. It says, God waited 2 full more years, and the cupbearer forgot about him. And the cupbearer gets out, you know, and he completely forgets that Joseph told him to, you know, remember me, do this for me, remember when you come before Pharaoh, and he completely forgets about him. But 2 years later, after all that's over, after Joseph's plan to get out fails, Pharaoh has a dream. And the cupbearer remembers then the gift that God gave Joseph. He doesn't remember Joseph saying, you know, remember me in this, remember that. He remembers the gift that God gave. And he says, you know, Pharaoh, I've met someone in prison when I was down there, and he can interpret dreams. He can do what you're asking to do. And, you know, a lot of times we try to warp that. And I've kind of had that conversation with God when I read that, was, you know, I would be doing the same thing. You can't punish Joseph for trying to do that. You know, if I'm in prison, I'm going to be trying every way I can to get out. We're going to do everything I can. But with that dream, with what Joseph tried to accomplish, it kind of showed that God doesn't come through. And in contrast to that, you know, you have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Also, you know, Old Testament kind of contemporaries with Joseph and later on. And they come before Nebuchadnezzar. And it's so interesting to read what he tells them. He says, you know, if you don't bow down before the idol, you know the story. If you don't listen to the music, if you don't bow down, if you don't worship my idol, then you're going to be thrown into the furnace. And it's so interesting to read their reaction, because a lot of us would be saying, you know, we can just bow down. It's, you know, it's a statue. We can make all the hoo-las and hoo-pahs and clap our hands and we'll get out of here alive. It's really easy to blend in at that point. It's really easy at that point to say, you know, this would just be an easy out. God can, you know, fulfill his dream later. Whatever God has for us in this land, this could be an easy out. But it's so interesting to read what they say. And, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning, fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. And they say, but if not, if the dream is dead, if God's not even fulfilling it anymore, if not, we're still sticking to the plan. Even if you throw us in the fire, even if that's what God is calling us to, we're still sticking to the plan. We're not abandoning our dream.
Because we came here with a purpose. You know, we got taken during your raids, during your things, and we started at the very beginning when the king tries to get them to eat different things, tries to do them. We established our purpose, that we were going to live differently in this foreign land. We established our purpose, and we're sticking to it. And a lot of us, that's what we did as Christians. When we became a Christian, we decided that we were going to live for a purpose in a foreign land. We were going to live differently than the ones around us. When we became Christians, we decided to live differently. And as these trials come, as a furnace comes, as different trials in our lives comes, we have to decide that we're sticking to the plan. We're not straying from it because it's easier or because we'll experience less pain or because we think that's the better route to take. We take the route that Christ has laid out for us. And I love their response. They say, you know, God has the power to deliver us, but even if he doesn't, this is what we decided to do. This is what we've chained ourselves to, and this is what we're sticking to. And a lot of times we take hard times to believe that we're not in God's will. But that's one of the biggest keys about having a dream. It means when hard times comes, it means that God is still there. When hard times come, it does not mean that we've somehow stepped out of God's will. That's not what it means. It means that God is still with us. And so, you know, a lot of times when we run into these kind of trials, we kind of shy back from it. And a lot of you know, you saw the video this morning of the work we're doing in Haiti. And a lot of you know how Jack Irison has been working with a couple of schools and building a school in Cap-Haitien and in Port-au-Prince, different works. But what you might not know are a lot of the troubles that he's run into. And when he's worked down there, and I've gone down with him a couple of times now, and it's amazing to see just the red tape that you have to run into when you're trying to do anything in Haiti. When you're trying to build something or when you're trying to move something or import something or do anything, there's so much red tape and there's corruption and there's politics and it's unbelievable and you just want to pull your hair out at times. And you want to do, and Jack's one of the most patient people I've ever met. And so the first trip we went down there, when we ran into all of this, you know, I'm ready to just, you know, scream at these people. And Jack's just kind of going and, you know, he said, all right, we'll just think of another way to do it. And we'll just keep on doing it. And there's this increasing number of journals that have been submitted that say that Haiti is this failed nation state, that Haiti economically, socially, that somehow Haiti is just to be written off. And a lot of countries are moving towards that. Excuse me. A lot of countries are moving towards that. They're moving towards cutting Haiti completely off. They're moving towards talks about rebuilding the entire government or actually dissolving it and you know, rejoining Haiti with Dominican Republic as this kind of, you know, colony. They've thought of different ways that they can just kind of write off the Haitian people. And, you know, from being down there, from a worldly perspective, you can almost see that they might be right. You think, well, this is hopeless. We're not doing things. You know, people are pumping, different governments are pumping money, and we're not seeing it, and there's still corruption, and there's still politics. But that's what man says about the country. And, you know, God says something different about Haiti. God says something different about the dreams for Haiti. Because if you've been down there, if you watch that video, if you've seen the school that they're building down there, it's changing lives. And the things that Jack is doing down there, the things that we're doing as a church to help down there, we're changing lives. And you know, so many times that becomes something we hear, we don't listen to, changing lives. But like we said earlier, life changing is when someone meets you and they leave differently. They were in a direction and they met you and they leave differently than when they met you. And that's what happened. These people are on directions for corruption. These people are on the direction for corruption, for politics, for these different things that have gone wrong in the country of Haiti. And when they come to these schools, these kids, when they see this hope, when they feel a dream that they can actually do something with their lives, it's unbelievable. And that's what we're doing there. God has said something different for Haiti. You know, it's like the story of the wise men that we told at Christmas time, where they come to see Jesus and they leave a different way. And that's what we want to be. We want to be that representation of Jesus. We want people who come to see us, people who we go to see, who we help, to leave differently than when they met us. And, you know, living the dream means that when God says to go, we go. You know, no matter the circumstances, no matter what's around us, no matter how impossible it seems to us, when God says we need to go, we step out and we go. There's a story of Peter in the Gospels where they're in the boat and Christ comes walking on the water towards them. And, you know, they're scared, and he comes to them in the boat, and they're scared, and he's walking, and they realize that it's Christ. He says, it's me, Christ. And Peter says, you know, this interesting thing. Peter calls to him, and he says, Lord, if it's you, ask me to come to you. Let me walk on the water to you. Peter asked for this impossible thing, something no one had done, something that was impossible. Even in the Old Testament, the story they read, Moses parts the water. So in their Jewish mind, you know, if something's going to happen in the water, it's going to part, if God's going to work there. But Peter asks him, he says, Lord, I don't want to walk between it. I don't want to walk under it. God, I want to walk on the water like you're walking. And God, and you know, Christ tells him, he says, you know, come. Take heart, it's I. Don't be afraid. And Peter says, I want to come. And he says, come. And so Peter steps out on the water. And you know, it's interesting, none of the other disciples even asked to go out there. You know, it's kind of, if I saw someone, you know, walking and then someone else asked them and they said, yeah, you can walk on it, I'd want to walk too. And so, you know, but none of the other disciples, they all stay in the boat. And Peter gets out there and he fixes his eyes on Christ and he starts to walk towards him. And it says, you know, Peter's eyes start to shake and they start to focus on the waves around him. And they start to come off of Christ. He starts to take them off of Christ and he starts to sink. And you know, living the dreams means focusing your vision on Christ. It means putting your eyes on Christ and not letting anything around you shake them. It's not letting any of the circumstances around you shake them. And when Christ comes to you and says, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Why did you even doubt for a minute that what I told you was going to happen? And I feel like that's Christ's message to us today. When we start to take our eyes off him, when we start to see the circumstances, we start to warp the dream, we start to try to live our own way. He says, why did you doubt what I promised you? So, you know, this morning, if you found yourself with a dead dream, if you found yourself in that situation, God is calling you to revive it. God is calling you to look back, you know, read back your old notes that God wrote to you. Read back something that God gave you, this dream, this vision, this promise that God promised you he would fulfill. And start to revive that. Start to live that again. And, you know, we're gonna have an altar time, we call it. But, you know, you can do it in your seat. You can do it up here. But this morning, I wanted to sing this song. And I wanted to have this moment of telling God that if he's telling us to go, we're going to. Telling God that whether he calls us to walk through the fire, whether he calls us to walk on the water, whether he calls us to these different things, just to live in prison, to go on the mission field, to live big, that we're going to do it. Because God is still calling his people to big things. God is still calling Christians to big dreams. And he's still fulfilling those. And you know, we're going to keep the altars open. And I wanted to make the call as well. If you listen this morning and you're saying to yourself that you're tired of not having a dream. And maybe you've been a Christian for a while. Maybe you've never accepted Christ. But you're tired of not having a dream. Christ is calling you to that. Because when you truly accept him, you have that dream of becoming the earth shaker. When you truly begin to live for Christ, you have that dream of being a life changer. When you accept Christ, you dream big and he fulfills them. When you accept Christ, you feel this void inside of you that says, I'm going to live for something. And you begin to live for something. When you revive the dream, you start to live it. You begin to live what Christ has for you. You begin to live. And so we'll sing that song this morning.
If you say go,
you can stand to your feet.
We
and just start to worship him this morning. Start to tell him that you'll say yes to what he has for you.
If you say step out on the water and they say it can be done, we'll fix our eyes on you.
Sing it again.
I want to make that call. If you want to come down here and make that change, you can. We have the elders who will pray with you. If you want to make that change in your life, but again, you can do it where you are. You can do it during the week when you decide, I want to start living the dream. Whenever that situation, whenever that moment arrives for you, that's when you can start. When Christ puts it on your heart that this is what I have for you to live for, that's when you can start living your dream.
Withdraw. We will gaze into the flames and look for you.
This morning is your chance to do that. If you want to be part of something bigger than yourself, if you want to make that decision this morning, there's no easier way to do it. The words are simple. You simply tell Christ that you believe that He died for you and you want to live for Him. You believe that He is Christ, that He actually died for your sins and you want to live for Him. And you tell Him that this morning. You believe it with your heart and then you begin to live it. Because when you become a Christian, you gain that dream. You gain that chance to live for something bigger. You don't stand alone anymore. So we're going to sing that again. And again, I want to make that call. If you want to come down here and make that declaration that if Christ says go, you will go. Or if you want to make that decision to tell Him that He's the Lord of your life, that you want to live for Him, you want to live the dream, you can do that as well. We want to open these up. And again, the elders, please come pray for these guys. You know, they're coming up here making this declaration. And if you're in your seat and you have that dream, if you're living that dream, pray for the ones up here. Join with them. You know, during the week when you're having a meal with other church members, on Sunday afternoon, ask them what their dream is. Ask them what you can do to help them accomplish that. Start to live this dream together. Because that's what we're called to as a church, as a body, as individuals, as Christians. So we're going to sing that again. If He says go, we'll go. Whether it's walk on the water or through the fire, we'll go.
If you say go, holy, we'll go. If you say wait, we will wait. If you say step out on the water, and they say it can't be done. We'll fix our eyes on you and we will come. If you say go, if you say go, we will come. If you say wait, we will wait. If you say step out, they say it can't be done. We'll fix our eyes on you and we will come.
Would you? It says, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. I'm going to tell you, when you've got a joy set before you, it helps you endure all this stuff you got to go through. When you know that there's a dream for you, let me tell you, that is, listen, without a dream, people perish. That meant, in the Hebrew, that word perish means to run wild with no direction, with just going around in circles. But you know, God's got, I like that Ben got a great word this morning. A dream will sustain you. A dream will bring you through. A dream with the joy that's set before you, it'll bring you through things that you could not endure otherwise when you've got a dream. Maybe for yourself, for your family, for your children, whatever it may be, God's got a dream for you. Latch onto that thing and take it, because it's God-given. Every dream dies. And this morning I just sensed that, because every dream always goes through the death period of its life. And I feel this morning Ben had a word at the right season, the right time. Some of you, your dreams have died. But I'm going to tell you, that's what happens to a seed, so that it can be rebirthed. It can bring forth much fruit. Unless the seed fall to the ground and die, it brings forth nothing. But when it does, see, that's the greatest thing. If your dream has died like Abraham's, now it's come to pass. Now it's ready to bring back. And I feel it's a word in season that God wants to revive and renew dreams in your life. So this morning, bow your heads, would you? Father, I thank you for the word this morning. Thank you, Lord, for a timely word in our lives. Lord, thank you right now. You're reviving dreams that have been put on shelves, and dreams that have been packed away, and dreams that have been buried. And this morning, they're being brought back to life. You're renewing. You're blowing back on it. You're reviving. You're breathing into those things afresh and new. And I thank you right now, Lord God, that the impossible things that you dream, that they will come to pass. Thank you that life cannot kill the dream. Thank you, Lord, that life cannot kill the dream. Father, I want you to close your eyes, because our reading this week was Joseph. Our reading this week was the day he sat on that throne and his brothers came and they bowed down. And on my Bible, I wrote a little note. What was he thinking when he saw his dream fulfilled? He told them, you're going to bow down. And all the things that Ben talked about, and the day he sat on that throne of Egypt, and his brothers, not knowing who he was, came and bowed down. I had to believe. You know, they said years before, let's see what becomes of his dreams. He's sitting on that throne, and there's his dreams being brought to pass. Listen, the day is going to come when you're going to see your dream fulfilled. And I'll never forget, I love the old saying, great it is to dream the dream when you stand in youth by the starry stream. But a greater thing it is to fight life through, and at the end, to say the dream was true. And that happens with you. Some of you, your dream has died, but God has come. Listen, God doesn't bury dead things. God resurrects them. And this morning, God has come with a word this morning, a word in season for us to listen to, let the Lord revive the dream. So, Father, this morning, we thank you for what you've called every one of us to do. Thank you for a season. Thank you for a word of encouragement. Thank you, Lord, that we're going to fight it through. And for the joy set before us, we're going to see that dream brought to pass. Everybody say amen this morning. Give them a great clap offering. Would you do that? Turn around and give somebody good a high five. Would you do that? Give them a good high five. God bless you. Thank you for a good word. We'll see you Wednesday night and all the groups in the prayer meeting.